powered by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
And across from him, we've got Andrew Sheps.
Hey, Mike.
And next to me on my left here, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Martin and Bobby are not with us tonight.
Oh.
That's kind of suspicious, if you ask me.
And rare.
that lends to the old joke of, what do you get when you're missing two Englishmen?
Oh, what's that?
I don't know. There has to be a joke.
Oh, there has to be a joke there. We're living it right now.
But sitting with us today, we have Greg Ondo from Stein.
Greg.
Yay!
Great to be here again.
And, and Greg, you have the honor and privilege of being the first repeat guest here on the Audio Podcast.
Impressive.
unless you want to consider Andrew, who just liked it so much he became a panel
member.
I
only guested once.
That's true.
And then we decided to trick you to come more than, you know, that one time. So anyhow.
Well, that's because you said Bobby would be here. You lied.
And you lied.
So anyhow, welcome, Greg. I'm glad to have you here today. I wanted to cover a few things, but first of all, the Audio Nowcast is a podcast where we talk about the audio industry. And we talk about music, games, and live sound, anything that has to do with audio, we talk about here on the Audio Nowcast. And I want to welcome back Scott.
Hello.
Scott hasn't been here for a couple podcasts. And Scott, what have you been working on?
I'm working on a movie called The Express. It's a movie from Universal. Unfortunately, it comes out October 8th, 2008. We've been working on it. We did a temp mix, went very, very well, and we're quite excited about it. It's very stylized, and it's about a football player named Ernie Davis. So,
well, great. I mean, I know the last podcast you were working some insane, crazy hours.
We were working for about a month straight, prepping it. We have a small crew working on it, but it's a audio mosaic. This movie, because at any given point, you know, many times when you do a soundtrack for a movie, the dialogue's playing on one level and the effects playing on another level and the music's doing its thing, and it all runs very well parallel. Well, this movie is every 3 to 4 seconds is a distinctively different cut, and we need to figure a way to, you know, are we going to hit the crowds? Are we going to hit Ernie in slow-mo? Are we going to hit football tackles? Are we going to go with no sound and just music, or no music and just effects? And it's about 2 hours and 10 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's probably a little more challenging than most films. And at any given point, you've always got to be aware of what's going on in the big picture.
Wow. And when's the release, when they talk about releasing the movie?
October 2008-ish. You know, I mean, the date's still, you know, I don't think they've tied anything directly, but they're going to have it for Oscar for 2008.
Wow. Well, we've missed you the last couple of podcasts, and especially Andrew, because no one to spar with. You know? Well, hey, a couple of things I want to talk about, guys. First of all, remember we were talking about weird places to work and, you know, bizarre. Well, I had a new one. I flew to Washington this past weekend, and I ended up working, doing some spotting for a documentary that I'm mixing on the airplane. I had a quick time, and I was using Soundtrack Pro, and I had my effects drive there. And up in the sky on my MacBook Pro, I was starting to spot in some effects for the movie, and I just thought that was just...
That's pretty crazy.
That's cool.
That was really cool, especially it was on Virgin America, and, you know, all the seats in Virgin America have power, so you can keep your laptop on for four hours straight. And it was actually kind of cool, and the flight went really quick, and it was just kind of
fun. Did you get internet access on it?
No, not up in the air. Not yet, but they do have ports, and they are planning on doing that.
Wow.
So...
I mean, I know we're not covering it this time, but I can speak for Greg here. I know for a fact that I've had to get Cubase authorization codes from him when he's been on an Amtrak train on the East Coast. Because I remember that happened a few months ago. I know he's had to work in some weird places.
Magic cell phone.
That's right, the magic cell phone. Yeah, so that was kind of cool. I thought that was just like, wow, this is a new experience. But it ended up working pretty well. I went to Washington, and I know this has nothing to do with audio, but I think if you're an American, you need to go to Washington, D.C. at least once in your lifetime, because it just gives you – I swear I felt like saying the Pledge of Allegiance like every 30 minutes while I was out there. Because, you know, growing up on the West Coast, you just – all the monuments and everything that you see is just truly – it was truly amazing. I just remember walking that lawn and just seeing the Washington Monument and going to the top of the monument and looking down on the Lincoln Memorial. It was just amazing. So I don't know if you guys have ever been there.
Yeah, but I live outside of D.C. actually.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah. And you see the monuments at night, that's the secret time to see them.
That's actually exactly what I saw, and it was just truly
amazing.
Even
like the World War II Memorial is beautiful at night. It's like very well lit up with the fountains and everything. It's great.
The whole thing about going to Washington, I just wanted to tell you, not only was it a story about weirdest places, but it was a horror story about audio, because I went in there to do some consulting for a GPS tour, and the company that I was consulting with, I went to go ride their tour of the way they use it right now. And so I went and I sat on the bus, and it started going, and they played the first stop because apparently it was being played off a CD, and they start and stop it with a foot switch. So the first stop went off, you know, before we left. And then when they got to the second stop, the first stop played again.
Oh, no.
And then we went to the third stop, and the first stop played again. And the first stop kept playing. An hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, no.
It just repeated the first stop over and over. They tried to turn the volume down, and they couldn't. And the only way it didn't drive anybody insane was because the bus was so loud that it would cover it up when it was actually going. But as soon as it stopped, you heard the first stop going over and over.
This is over speakers?
This is over speakers.
Oh, boy.
Luckily, or not luckily, but I guess people were upset, and they kind of left the tour bus, you know, because it was just get annoying, because it was the type of tour where you can get
off. It's like
on
a hop-on-off.
Exactly.
Off.
Yeah. Get off, but it was...
This is why they're hiring consultants.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. It was not too hard to sell services after that.
That sounds like torture, actually. It's like waterboarding or something.
Well, yeah, because I made a phone call and I said, you need to tell your driver to take the CD out.
Yeah.
And that's all they had to do, and they did that. But
So what was the first stop?
The first stop was talking about Washington, D.C. and the ethnic makeup.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I've blocked it out of my head altogether. So that was my weekend. And
well, I'm sure your price went up after that, right?
I felt sorry. Actually, yeah. the other, it's like, okay, I'll help you. I don't, you know, I just don't want to ever have anybody to go through what I just did right now. But it was kind of funny. I want to talk about a few things. Number one, the new Mac OS came out.
Dun, dun,
and
dun.
I know a lot of guys out there, and girls also, work on the Mac platform. And I just wanted to really quick talk about if you guys planned on upgrading. I know, Andrew, you just recently.
Well, I bought it on the way here tonight, but I don't have a machine I can install it on, because the two Macs that are pretty up to date both run Pro Tools, and Pro Tools is not ready yet.
Right.
Or, you know, they're not ready for each other. Put it that way.
What about you, Rob?
I'm really excited about it because everything in my studio has just been working far too well.
Oh, you should install it tonight.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to get home and just put, you know, I'm just going to install Leopard and Vista on every single machine I have and just see how that goes. No, I mean, I like being on the cutting edge with some software, but operating systems are not included. And I probably will put Leopard. Actually, I'm getting ready to get another Mac laptop, which I'm sure will come with Leopard. That's why I waited to get it. But so I like having each new operating system on a test system just so I can check it out. But I'm not going to be using Leopard or Vista for real work for a while. I mean, Vista I'm getting a little closer because it's been out for a while. But Leopard, it's going to be a while.
What about you, Scott? Do you have any upgrade plans? Or?
I just started seeing daylight like a day or so ago. So, I mean, I saw it, you know, sitting there in between little bits of mixes. I saw that, you know, the countdown on the Apple website that it was coming. But Right now, usually when I'm in the middle of a project, I don't change anything.
Right.
So the next time I think about changing anything will be February.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I want to upgrade, and I'm actually going to buy the upgrade.
What does Leopard give you? I mean,
there are a lot of operating system things that are cool. I mean, a lot of cool stuff. Nuts and bolts
stuff. I've heard it's faster.
Supposedly, I don't know.
Well, they do, CoverFlow now for your directories, and it's CoverFlow.
Including across the network. There's a lot of being able to preview files across the network if they're the right type that the operating system can handle.
The Claris files?
Yeah, that'll work, no problem.
Well, they say it's faster on an Intel-based Mac. On a PowerPC, it's not going to be at all faster. Yeah. Maybe slower, but on Intel, it'll be faster.
And there's screen sharing within iChat, which looked very cool. So they've sort of built Timbuktu into iChat now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some pretty big upgrades under the hood that they've done.
If you were frustrated by Pro Tools working, it'll solve that.
Yeah. Well, that brings up a good point. Are there flagship programs that you guys wait to upgrade before you upgrade like an OS? Like
definitely.
For me, Pro Tools is a big one. The other one is I use some 3D programs that I wait to see when they're going to be compatible.
For me, Pro Tools also. But like Logic 8, which is owned by Apple, is that already Leopard compatible?
Does
anyone know?
That is, but FileMaker isn't. So
really?
Some Apple stuff is and some isn't.
Now, why would you buy operating system software until all the applications are more stable?
If you're just a glutton for punishment.
Well, because for me, on my laptop, other than running LE or actually M-powered every once in a while to do some quick editing, it's an office machine. And an office machine, you can upgrade anytime you want because there's very little that completely refuse to work. And I think even FileMaker, they say – yeah, it works, and my databases are nothing, so it's not like I'm doing anything that won't work.
Right. Well, the other thing too is there's a couple features that I'm actually really looking forward to using, and one of them is their look back, their backup,
time machine,
and that to me is worth its weight in gold, and the fact that you can back up your machine to an external drive and then restore it, and I think that's. Well, I took the Mac in to get the screen fixed, and the place that I took it into, they charged me $150.
So can you get a touch screen and move the albums across?
I don't know how it works, but all I know is they charged me $150 to back up my machine, which I thought was kind of ridiculous. I gave it to them, and they said, okay, well, we can fix it, and I'll tell you what, for $150, we'll back up your data on it. And I backed up most of my data. I didn't back up, all my applications and everything. And they said, well, we're going to send it. And if we have to send it to Apple, they may just, wipe your whole drive and you might get it back brand new. And I'm like, why would they do that over the screen? Well, anyhow, to make a long story short, I felt, well, $150, it's better to be safe than sorry. But now if I have this, I can send it in and not worry about that.
Well, and you should go to the Apple website and they've got a quick time sort of introducing the main features. And the demo of Time Machine is insane because it's not just back up your hard drive and restore it.
Right.
It's within any folder. When you're just looking at a folder looking for stuff and you're like, man, this thing used to be here. I know it. You can invoke Time Machine for that folder and then just go back and tell it to automatically look at the last time that folder's contents changed, or you can look day by day. And when you find it, you go, oh, yeah, I want to keep that.
Does it have the ability at all to synchronize between different drives, like take these two drives, compare them, and
no,
any
that, differences? That's not at all what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not
incremental. It's a fully automated incremental backup, but it can also be an incremental restore where you can open up iPhoto and say, where are my pictures? And Time Machine iPhoto back to before you mistakenly deleted the set of pictures.
What you're talking about for comparing drives,
Synchronize
Pro X, I have to give a shout out to, which Andrew turned me on to, but it's really good.
By Qdia.
I haven't bought it yet.
Qdia, yes. Like Idea, but with a Q.
Synchronize Pro X.
Pro X.
What was the name? Synchronize Pro X. What was the name?
It's really good.
Yeah.
So as long as it's configured right.
Does it save all of that? Then it must keep saving it over and over.
Time Machine?
I mean, if you delete something, then it's really not deleting it, right?
No, because it does this to an external drive.
Oh, that's the Time Machine to an external
drive.
By the way, that was Ken, just so when you hear that voice.
All right, Ken. Engineer extraordinaire.
Yeah.
But
the QuickTime little, I mean, I think it's maybe 10 minutes long, but the, hey, here's what's new in Leopard, it's well worth watching because they just kind of whip through everything, and it's good.
So, Greg Steinberg, before we talk about all the products you have, are you guys compatible with Leopard?
We're doing kind of final testing, but everything seems to be really good so far with our latest Nuendo 4.1 and Cubase 4.1. So a lot of users in the forum that have kind of taken the plunge have had very positive experiences. There's been some issues with like Melodyne plugins under Rewire, but kind of trashing the preferences fixed it. So, but it seems, you know, very stable so far.
That's great. And if, you know, from a software developer point of view, were there any challenges into to making it work with it, or
you know, there's always challenges that come up, and it's always, you know, the developer's kit was always different than what the actual shipped version is. So it's, you know, so people always expect it to work on the first day, and then we have to kind of actually buy it ourselves and download it and run it and do further testing on it. So we're kind of in the final testing stage, but everything is looking really good on it so far.
Wow, well, that's cool.
I know of I was actually talking to a few friends from different software companies who said their applications had all been working under Leopard, under the test kit, but at 6 o'clock, as soon as Leopard was released, every single one of these companies sent people to the stores to buy the released version because they said, we can't count on the fact that things haven't been changed.
Oh.
And that's a pretty scary prospect.
Yeah. I think there's a lot more hardware issues at this point than software.
I got you.
A lot of stuff.
Okay. We'll see. So, Leopard, the, consensus is, caution.
Yeah. It's in a pretty box though. Yeah.
It is. It's all glowy and 3D-ish.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about is Pro Tools. They just brought out the Pro Tools, the Micro. Are you familiar with that? It's about the size of a USB key and it has no input. It's outputs only. But now you can have that dongle and run your Pro Tools systems on your laptop without having to have the big box. Have you heard about that?
Saw it and was actually disappointed that it's 48K and below. It just became, because they sell a version of their software that works with the M-Audio stuff and the Transit, which isn't as small as the new M-Box Micro or whatever they're calling
it,
works up to 96K.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah. So
that
is what I bring on planes and comp vocals and do stuff. And this other one, I mean, it looks great because it's tiny, would fit in your pocket, but it's 48K and below. So
interesting.
But it's just a dongle. You shouldn't need the computer, right?
Well, it's but it's a stereo out only M-Box, but it's absolutely tiny, which is great for carrying it around.
Size of a flash key.
And it's also really expensive.
Yeah, it's $279 for.
I think Turtle Beach has one on PC that's $39.
Yeah, so
that's
so not impressed because the Transit is $89 street price or something like that, and it's 96K output. And when you're below 88.2, it's stereo in and stereo out, optical or analog.
The only thing with that though is in the Transit is you can't upgrade your DV toolkit to the M-powered version of
No, but Pro you can Tools. Get the music production toolkit, which for me was what I needed. I didn't need the DV toolkit.
Right.
So that as far as I know, that's the only difference between M-powered and LE,
yeah,
right?
That's
the ability to get that toolkit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was I'm trying to think if there was something else, a track count.
There's some other differences.
I think there's a track count too.
Well, no, my track count's the same.
What's your track count?
48.
Is it 32?
No, it's 48.
48 mono, 48 stereo.
Okay, then maybe it is the same then. But yeah, then maybe it's just DV toolkit. But
so I thought that was a really bizarre product to bring out.
Yeah, I thought it was really expensive for the little dongle. I mean, they could have...
Now, is that the price with software?
That's the price with software.
So then maybe that's not so bad, because the Transit, for $89, there's no software. You still have to pay $200 and something for the M-powered Pro Tools.
But I wish there was an upgrade path for people who are
Well, that's
have
the thing.
Pro
is there
Tools.
A hardware-only purchase price?
Not yet. Not that I know of.
I'm sure there will be. And at which point, if it's more than $80,
I don't know.
I'd be surprised.
I don't think so. I'd be surprised if they did, because they've never done that before. So I would be surprised if they...
Because you could rip their software so easy between people. All you need is a code to give to someone else.
That's true.
So if they just started releasing their hardware, they'd be in...
Well, no, that's not true, because M-powered and HD are both iLock, and they could easily switch LE to iLock.
To iLock, yeah.
So
yeah, I just thought it was awfully. I was with you. It was awfully expensive. I mean, I love the
but
idea.
But I didn't realize it came with software. So it's bizarre that you can't buy it separately. But
yeah, because I love the idea of Pro Tools, 48 tracks, and you get DV Toolkit, and you're mixing commercials at home. I mean, I like that whole idea, but it's just awfully expensive because now I'm going to have to buy it yet again, and this will be the third purchase of a. Of an LE system, you
right.
know, because I buy it for the hardware, you know, when the Mini came out, oh, that was the smallest one. And now this is the smallest.
Yeah. I think it's also, you know, I think you're sensing some competition between M Audio side and the DigiDesign side.
Oh, yeah.
As well. So there's obviously some, I think, struggle going on there.
And competition from, you know, Apple with their new Logic 8, the whole studio that just came out, and the fact that
well,
now
I think
you can
it's fine if they compete, but M Audio and DigiDesign are the same company, so they ought to get along.
it all comes down to revenue recognition. Yeah, who gets to recognize
that's
the
true.
Revenue?
Right.
You know? So they're competing against each other, even though the same parent company.
But
they ought to at least try and play nice.
Yeah.
You would think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. I think it was you know, obviously they're going to sell a bunch of these systems. I think. But it just seems awfully expensive. I don't know. Rob, does that appeal to you, having a little USB Pro Tools system? Although you work in 96, and if it's only 48.
Yeah, I mean, I don't work at 96 for some TV and, you know, commercial stuff. But we do some things at 96, and I agree with Andrew. It seems a little crazy. Wouldn't support it, especially because there are plenty of other devices that support 96K in really small footprints.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe there's some technological reason why that thing couldn't do 96. No. Maybe it would have to be a little tiny bit bigger.
And what about you, Scott? You see,
I totally live in 48,
yeah.
4824.
Me too.
But I need 5.1. I need multi-channel. Even if I'm using a fold-down of stereo, you know, I need to be able to translate back and forth between an HD system. Very rarely would I only use a stereo system throughout the whole project.
Right. Well, I bet your dialogue editors there are going to have a field day with
it. Sure. Yeah.
The other thing is, if I'm going to have a super teeny little system, it needs to have at least two inputs, because it's nice to be able to be out and about and recording stuff with a laptop. Just because of the way I work, I wouldn't normally want a playback-only system. I'd want to be able to capture something.
That's definitely a fair criticism on that. I do think
that's just me personally. I realize everybody uses it differently.
I just think it'll definitely find a niche in the post production. It's definitely going to find a good place in post production, because you're going to see, you know, more guys doing more work at their house or, you know, at their own personal studio.
We got one of our guys that actually he lives in Laguna, so he takes the train, does work back and forth on the train. So there's another, you know, 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Part of his day, and
But is it my imagination? Aren't there plenty of options for people to work at home?
Not for DigiDesign, as far as small. I mean,
the little M-powered things. I mean, there's so many of them. I think anybody who needs to work at home at this point is or can.
Yeah,
yeah.
What are the limitations?
I think this is more the working on a plane.
Yeah,
and quite frankly, too, even if you work at home, you know, I've done a lot of work at home. Sometimes it would be convenient just to go outside or go someplace, depending on how critical listening you have to do, just to be able to change your environment.
Well, I mean, and that's why I've got the laptop system, because anytime I've got to do single edits or just figure out an order for an album, I want to be in the house or I want to be out on the patio. I don't want to be in the studio in front of all the gear while I'm doing two-track edits.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I do editing all the time, and there's a couple places I've actually gone to the bookstore and just sat in the coffee shop and done some editing there or went to the library. You know, just sometimes it just helps getting out of your environment.
Is it battery powered? I mean, is it powered
it's not,
by
it's
the computer?
USB bus powered.
Is this the only thing they've ever made that doesn't require a?
No,
no, no, no. M-Box.
M-Box is
from the very original one.
It's only USB powered.
Yeah. So I have a question for the both of you. Is that when you're starting to work with, you know, you've got your desktop system, which does a lot of heavy lifting, and then sometimes you're going to use your laptops. How are you dealing with the whole plug-in issue? Are you buying plugins for every system, which is kind of crazy? Are you moving your dongle, iLux around?
For me, what I'm doing on the smaller system is editing, not mixing. So I'll have I mean, I've got two copies of a lot of the plugins, but I don't really need them because I'm either editing mixes that are already done, so I don't need any plugins, or I'm comping vocals or going through drum takes and stuff like that where it's before I've actually put on a lot of plugins. So it doesn't come up for me.
And for me, my portable system is actually mostly used for recording, for location recording or just being able to grab a system to take to another part of the house for recording. Which on the film we mixed earlier this year, I learned that was going to be a useful thing to be able to go to different parts of the house and do Foley and just all kinds of crazy recording. But so I don't need plugins.
But also being a one man shop, it's no big deal for me to take my iLock.
Yeah, me too.
It's not like I'm crippling a system anyone else needs to use.
Yeah, I take the iLock and I've got all my plugins on one iLock and you can pretty much take that.
I actually filled up my iLock.
Did you really?
I tried to download another asset. I said nope.
How many plugins is that?
I had 115 licenses on it, and I can transfer
with
from one iLock to another. Yeah. Oh yeah. but I can't do the download. It takes too much space in the iLock to actually download a new asset.
They all have a bit of memory on them, so
yeah.
Well, the other thing too is, a lot of the plugins that I use also don't require an iLock, and I can install them, on my big system as well as on my little system. And I think that's
Digizine plugins.
No, I use
OVST.
No, like Native Instruments, where you can have a couple different, two authorizations.
Sure.
And actually, you can have more than that because once you deauthorize a computer, your authorization pops
back
up.
But I thought with them, you couldn't reauthorize the same computer.
You can't. That's it. You can't reauthorize.
You can only move.
But you're not supposed to publicize that works, Mike. The Native Instrument Police are going to come to your door tonight.
Well,
maybe close by.
Hey, I am totally advocating buying their stuff. I'm not saying anything.
Well, and honestly, the GPS tracking in their cars are probably all buggy, like a lot of the software, so they wouldn't be able to find you anyway. If they're running it on a Mac. Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
But, all right. Well, anyhow, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Pro Tools Mini stuff. And, let's see. Right now we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Greg a little bit about, a lot of it about Steinberg and what they've been up to. And by the way, I just want to tell you that the Time Warp feature on Nuendo, I used it with Rob on a project.
Oh, it's awesome.
That was brilliant. That is brilliant. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
All right.
But we're going to take a break, and then we'll just catch you guys in a second.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast, and we're here with Greg Ondo of Steinberg. And, before I even get to Greg, you realize since Martin's not here, we haven't talked about emotion and soul of anything that we've discussed.
You know, Mike, as a songwriter, that has to be said once per podcast.
That's
so
right.
I felt the need. We love Martin and we miss him.
Yes,
well,
we do.
I have a little tidbit that goes to that, which is just funny. It's this article I came across online. I don't know if they bothered to print it or not, from Wired, where someone has written an article that vinyl is going to save the music industry.
Vinyl?
Really?
Vinyl. That everybody's ramping up their vinyl production, and there are quite a few albums I've seen that are being released only online, digitally, and vinyl. They're not bothering to print CDs. But this guy is claiming that they will sell enough vinyl that it will actually save the music business. I found that rather funny.
Wow.
Because you have to buy the records over and over and over again?
Yeah, because people are buying MP3s for their iPods, but they want the vinyl at home because it sounds so much better. And I mean, I do that sometimes, but I think I'm probably the only one on my block. I don't think it's saving the music industry, but I thought it was a pretty funny article.
Yeah, every time I start looking to thinking about starting to buy vinyl, I just look at how many records I'd have to start buying.
It's the best sound in the world.
No, I would say, it sounds great, but to me it would just...
You know what though? You go to Amoeba and spend $100 and you'd walk out of there with 40 records that are in good shape. So you can get started pretty quick. Because I waited years to do it, and then the floodgates opened, and I thought it was going to be nuts. And it's not as bad as you think.
Oh, great. That's all I need. That's all I need.
Yeah, you should do that, Mike.
Do that
tonight.
Another edition.
They'll still be open.
But how many stores are there in L.A.? where you can actually leave with vinyl satisfaction like that. I mean, Amoeba is the one we always bring up.
Well, but Virgin.
Yeah.
Virgin
still have vinyl?
Virgin has a lot of vinyl.
And I think more stores are going to start having it because they don't need the shelf space on the CDs because they're not selling CDs.
Well, better yet, how many music stores are left? Seriously, though.
Well, exactly. With Tower gone. Well, I mean, you'd order it online and they'll ship it. I mean, it's the same thing.
Well, how many turntable stores are left, too?
But I mean, think about this. Them, about 7 or 8 years ago, it was really, really hard to find a turntable. And now Fry's must have 18 different models of turntables.
Really?
Yeah.
Fry's has them?
Oh, absolutely.
And any music store.
Yeah, it started off just as DJs, and they were all kind of the Newmark and
don't show me the
those and the Pioneer knockoff. But now Sony has, I think, 3 different models of home turntable, and one of them's $80.
Wow. Yeah.
And they're starting to come with USB out.
Wow.
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No, I do know that they have that. What is it? Newmark makes the Ion, I believe, that has a USB out where you can.
Wow. I'd like to find a singer with a USB out. That would save so much.
I'd like to find a singer with a USB in.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but you know what's going to happen with vinyl, though, is people are going to, hey, it's going to sound like a great idea, and they're going to, you know, get the whole buzz and get caught up in the euphoria. But I know me. The first time I actually have to go up, pull out the album.
Well,
play it down,
see, this is where I think it all falls down.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio.
I don't think the attention span is there
and
for people to sit and listen to
the
album.
And
so, which is why I thought the article was great, but completely ridiculous.
I mean, I guess I just don't have that time to make, you know, it's a commitment to listen to your music because you do have to be in the mood and be in the right place. I guess at your studio, maybe while you're working. And
well,
like
I mean,
that.
For me, actually, in the house, it's better because I'll actually sit. And even if I can only make it through side one, I know I can actually sit and listen to that as opposed to turning it into just background stuff because it'll shuffle for 8 days if I put my iPod on there.
Yeah.
So that part of it's great, but I just don't think a lot of people are going to be into that.
Well, you know, it would lend itself also to the validity of buying a good stereo system because now you want to take advantage.
But where can you do that now?
Well, that's true, too.
You know what, though? If this takes off, Apple will just come out with the iTurntable, which you wear on a necklace, and it actually plays vinyl records, and it can shuffle them. It'd be kind of big.
Yeah, kind of.
Vinyl. Well, just remember, you heard it here, folks.
The iTable coming from Apple.
Patent that.
The iTable. Yeah. But
I digress.
That's a good tidbit, though.
That is a good tidbit. We'll have to see. And I'm still that whole battle, do I go to vinyl or not go to vinyl?
Just do it.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, I don't think going to vinyl is in place of anything else. I think you'll do the iPod
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. That's the thing.
It's just an additional way to listen to stuff you like.
Because I've been, like with Android, I go and I look at the vinyl and I'm like, man, I just would love to have records again.
I still have a ton of records. I still have my old collection and I keep my turntable up that I've had since 1980 because it was a really good turntable. And I still like going and listening back to the vinyl versions of things. Wow. And I've actually transferred some of the vinyl to CDs using the best converters I could find, and I still like the sound of that better than
CD releases. The Masternaum is horrendous.
Yeah.
So
well, see, I really that's when I started my music collection. It was all this is all cassettes and then CDs. So I never really had
A-track.
A vinyl. Never had. So obviously, I'm younger than a lot of people here. But no, but anyhow, well, all right, Andrew, we'll talk later. I'll have to get your guidance on.
Just go buy records, and that's it.
What's the
that's all I got.
First three records.
Well, you got to go get yourself a Dark Side of the Moon issue. I would pick up some Blue Note, some just old Miles, and stuff like that. And then whatever your favorite album was when you were in high school, go get that on vinyl.
And I'd have to co-sign Dark Side of the Moon. There was a half-speed master version of it.
Right.
Life-altering. It's really good.
I'm going to have to get Boston then.
Boston. Sometimes you don't really want to tell people what you're going to get. I just think it's your favorite album.
But high school, I like that Boston album.
Yeah, you can probably still find
Bay City Rollers.
I was going to say Bay City Rollers.
And they'll have it at Amoeba, and it'll be $5, and it'll be in good condition.
Boston with that guitar sound, that Rockman guitar sound.
They'll put it in a black bag for you, too, so you can make it to the car without being made fun of.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we won't talk about that anymore.
Remember to wear the Def Leppard t-shirt when you go to buy it.
There's nothing wrong with Def Leppard either. But so anyhow, Greg, on that segue. So, Greg, what's Steinberg been up to? What are you guys, what are you guys working on? I will tell you that, you know, before we took the break, the time warp function on Nuendo was just phenomenal. When I was working with Rob and we were doing a piece, it was video and they cut it to a Led Zeppelin song. And then we had to go and replace the music because they weren't going to license Led Zeppelin. And seeing the way Rob and the video was already edited and all the graphics were already done, so you know
we had to we had to basically do a we had to create a master track that matched the tempo changes of the Zeppelin track. And in the old days, that would have just been an all night thing.
Oh yeah, especially because you know Zeppelin isn't exactly known for their rock steady groove. You know,
yeah, it's not why you get a Zeppelin song.
They weren't playing to a click.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
and it tracked it just. Phenomenal. I mean,
yeah.
So
in the time warp, if you're not familiar with it, it just basically allows you to just drag the timeline to match the existing audio or MIDI. So if you do it to visual cues, or if you have like a band that comes in and plays, you could very easily within just a couple minutes have an entire tempo track. So all your edits occur on a beat, but the music doesn't have to be so sterile and you know be just one steady tempo. So right. It could actually breathe and stuff like that. So you can then do your edits on a beat, have your delays tempo synced, so you speed up, slow down, have your MIDI instruments, like virtual instruments like Groove Agent or Virtual Guitarist, automatically adjust the tempos to changing music as well.
Yeah, and it was pretty, some of them were pretty severe, and it didn't sound, you know, even though time warp, it didn't sound warpy at all. I mean, you couldn't hear it at all.
Well, because you can also, if you just want to first do the downbeats of the bars, you can do that, but then you can also go in and smooth out the changes in the middle. So if we have one bar that's at 100 beats per minute and the next one's at 95, I might go into the bar of 100 and make the last beat of it, you know, 97 or 96.
Yeah, so you could go down to the individual beat or, you know, 128th note if you're so inclined.
Yeah, it's really flexible.
Yeah, so I just wanted to give you kudos and props for that. But what's happening over at Steinberg?
Yeah, so we just released Cubase 4.1 and Nuendo 4.1, so a new generation. So with Nuendo, we have finally the Mac Intel support, a brand new automation system. It's kind of really based upon like a lot of the Euphonics automation concepts. So it's like kind of really ideal for post-production. In both Cubase and Nuendo, we've added a lot of flexibility with routing. So you have free routing, internal summing, recording. So you can do like sample accurate recording back in, side chaining, all new plugins, as well as a lot of flexibility. So you can take like all, like multiple virtual instrument tracks and just assign them to like phantom outputs and re-record them back in and just, you know, pass as an audio track internally. So a lot of great new stuff in there. So.
And did you guys come out with a new VST, like a VST3, or are you?
There's a VST3 spec that's just come out, and that's, so with Nuendo, we're getting like 40 plugins and about 37 new plugins with Cubase. And some of the advantages, what it has, you're going to have kind of a unified track or preset management that goes into Media Bay, which is kind of like almost like a sound miner, but for all of your relevant project files. So you can say, I want to look for this audio file, this name, or this track preset. So all your, you kind of have a centralized preset management. But also you can, every plugin is end channel capable. So if you have it on a, like a, you know, 7.1 track, the VST3 plugins will all work in surround or stereo or mono, whatever surround configuration you have automatically. And you could also have a preference whether it'll actually do the processing only when it's actually processing audio, or if it takes processing power when it's actually just as soon as it's instantiated. So you can, so if you're doing like a post project where you're changing different scenes with different plugins,
right,
those plugins only take the processing power when it's actually passing that audio through it. So for post, that's kind of good, but you have got a preference where you could toggle that behavior.
Wow, cool.
So. Yeah, that
dynamic processing rather than just stagnant.
Yeah, so it just doesn't eat up a little CPU cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing nothing. Well, that's pretty cool.
That's major, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then your plugin counts can pretty much
easily double. Yeah, for a lot of scenarios.
Or be unlimited if you're going from scene to scene to scene. You know,
exactly.
That's pretty cool. Now let me ask you, on the VST3, how does it play along with some of the older VST plugins and you know, the VST2 spec ones?
All the VST2 spec plugins work perfectly well inside of Nuendo. On the PC side, we did drop DirectX support because there's kind of very few plugins that weren't DirectX, that didn't have VST versions.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising. You know, really, I don't even know if the new Sonar supports DirectX anymore. Does it?
I think it's actually kind of being dropped by Microsoft and Vista and kind of phased out. So we just kind of we did it first and took all the grief for it. Now the whole industry is kind of following.
Well, it was
along.
Never the plug-in standard of choice.
Yeah,
yeah. It was kind
maybe SoundForge people are all pissed off, but I don't know.
Yeah, and there's some DirectX wrappers you can run for it, but you know there's just kind of very few viable DirectX plugins.
But even SoundForge does VST now.
Yeah.
So I mean,
yeah.
It's just
SoundMiner does VST.
Does it really? I didn't. You know what?
And Rewire now I just saw with version 4.
I mean, there was always that big argument between DirectX and VST and who was better, and some people were saying DirectX was better because it was, you know, embedded deeper into the
no,
the
but OS. The latency on the VST yeah. stuff was always better.
Yeah, so
yeah, and I think one of the big things is you didn't really want it to be so involved with the operating system.
Well, that's true.
Because as you know, as we've seen on the Mac side, sometimes as the operating system gets updated, then all of a sudden, like a whole series of plugins don't work anymore. So kind of having it independent of the operating system is often a very good thing.
Yeah, and also when your plugin crashes, it doesn't take your whole computer down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which I do know is a problem. Well, that's great. And on the Cubase side of things, are you?
Yeah, Cubase has kind of got a lot of the new things. So we have the new routing, the new a bunch of new like instrument presets. We have some new track presets. So one of the cool things you could do is actually say, you know, I like this instrument or like say this MIDI instrument with these effects and this preset. And you could just right click and save it as a preset and call it up and kind of search for all of its attributes, so you could, or even like an audio track. So you could say, I want clean guitar strat for this player. And you could say, pull up Bob's guitar preset, and you could just simply open up and drag all your presets over. So we're kind of getting the flexible routing, you know, the internal recording, side chaining, all that stuff in Cubase as well. So one of the major differences in the new versions is going to be Nuendo's kind of more extensive automation panel control. So you could do kind of more console style automation and more kind of post production automation techniques.
Are you using similar stuff from the Phonics where you can do spill tracks?
I'm sorry, what?
From spill tracks, where what you can do is, let's say, here's my drum kit. I'm doing my drums. Then you hit a button, and it shows all the correlating tracks that go with that.
You can
group.
Do that with the Euphonics, with the MC control. It's
right.
It's kind of set up for that.
But can you do it within the software itself, or do you need the controller?
It works with the controller at this point.
I have a question. Someone was telling me they thought that the new Nuendo was not coming with the same MIDI functionality, that was an extra thing. Is that true?
Some of the MIDI functionality has been split, so they call it the NEK, because obviously we have a ton of facilities like Electronic Arts has, you know, a whole bunch of copies in both LA, San Francisco, National Public Radio, for instance, has, I think, 30 copies. You know, we have a bunch of facilities that never do any MIDI stuff. So what they did is kind of broke out the MIDI score editor, the MIDI drum editor, and the virtual instruments, and you could buy those separately. But how it kind of works is when you could upgrade for less money and not have those features, or upgrade for the same normal upgrade price and kind of get all the inclusive music features as well. So for facilities that don't do any MIDI stuff, if you're just a post place, you could just say, okay, I don't need to invest in a score editor. You know, and it was kind of interesting. I was in Germany and they're kind of showing a lot of the post community the new features of 4. I go, and they're explaining, okay, you know, this doesn't come standard with a score editor. And all these people are like, it had a score editor? Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that was cool. I wish I used it, you know. So but for someone that kind of wants the full implementation, it's the same price, but you can get it for less money without the score editor, drum editor, and the included virtual instruments.
Which makes sense, because like a dialogue editor probably doesn't need a score view.
Yeah.
So then what's the big difference between Cubase and Nuendo?
Nuendo is going to have more extensive surround sound support, so we can do up to 10.2. Cubase will do 5.1. You're going to have the extended sample rates, so Cubase will do up to 96K. Nuendo will do up to 384K. Plus, you're going to have some additional restoration plugins, one called a post filter. So it's a filter that you could actually turn on the harmonic series. So if you wanted to get out like your 60-cycle hum, you could then turn on the overtone series and filter those out. Plus network collaboration. So with Nuendo, let's say we're all working on a project, each of us could be working on our own little part over the network at the same time and kind of be flying our edits in to a master project at the same time. So we don't have to kind of do, you know, one person work on their part, hand it off to another person.
Cool. Yeah,
so and the automation support. So those are the big differences.
Wow, that is really cool. Now, let me ask you, OMF support, is it still there? Have you worked on the OMF support?
Yeah, so OMF support, we're always working on it. It's always kind of a moving target with different applications. You know, one of the biggest things is, like, you know, with Pro Tools, it doesn't support stereo files, and they're OMF. OMFs generally do, but not in the Pro Tools environment.
Right.
We also, you know, have worked a lot on the AAF integration as well. So, and, you know, most people we find are just, you know, changing, like, broadcast WAV files to get back and forth. So,
what about video capability, playback capabilities? Can you edit the video track?
Yeah, in Nuendo you could always kind of go in and cut the video track and stuff like that, and make your edit. So you could do like a global edit of your audio, MIDI, and video. So if a scene got cut out, you could do that without having to wait for the video to be re-edited and rendered and uploaded and stuff like that.
Wow, that's cool. So. So slowly but surely, you know, the rumors about Cubase and Nuendo, you know, being merged into one, it seems like you guys are still on your path and kind of having...
Yeah. And, you know, we have a lot of commercial facilities that, you know, who just don't need MIDI stuff. And I think we really kind of paid attention. You know, we've done a lot of research, and, you know, we had Martin Stahl, who's kind of one of our guys who does like a lot of the planning, who just kind of came over here and kind of camped out with a lot of the post guys in Hollywood and LA and kind of got their feature set that they needed, especially for the automation. So, like, you know, all the right to end, right to start fill punch, you know, collecting different parameters that, you know, you didn't necessarily think were needed in the automation, but were. So, you know, there's a lot of the same automation paradigms that the post people had been kind of wanting to use. So we have been implemented.
Now, what about on the virtual instruments? What's happening on that front? Because when Wizzu, who used to develop for you guys, when they were bought by DigiDesign, did you guys feel a big pain in that? You know,
not so much. Obviously, we're owned by Yamaha, and they make some of the world's greatest synthesizers.
Right.
So I think we're seeing a lot of one of the new instruments that you get inside of Cubase 4 and Nuendo 4.1 is one called Halion 1, which is kind of using the Halion, our sampler engine playback, but with Yamaha sound. So it's actually the original ROM from the original motif.
Right.
So, you know, they have probably the best sound designers in the world for MIDI stuff. So we're going to integrate more and more with the Yamaha side on that. So,
do you think your virtual instruments, will they start, the development start being picked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we'll see. There'll probably be a lot of new stuff maybe next summer, maybe some stuff at Frankfurt show as well. So, and they've actually hired a lot of developers specifically for instruments as well, and working very closely with the Yamaha engineers.
Aren't some of the motif sounds now
in the Halion 1? Yeah.
Is that where they are?
Yeah.
Now, before we go in virtual instruments, are you guys doing any kind of dubber or any kind of recorder?
I think there's plans for that coming for Nuendo as well. We don't want to kind of market it as a, you know, dubbing environment now. But a lot of people have found that with the new kind of internal audio routing that, you know, people are kind of doing all their, you know, fold back, you know, they're re-recording back into the system because unlike other systems, it's actually sample accurate.
Right.
So when you do it, so there's a lot of people kind of using it for that now.
And you can use like GPI triggers or something that punch in and out.
And it also has, full control room capability now, right?
Yeah, so you can set up your different speakers and monitors. You can have automatic, you know, so you can, you know, instead of like buying hardware pieces, which are obviously expensive, you know, I could just have the audio outputs of my audio interface go to my different monitors. I could switch between like a 5.1, listen to like a large stereo, mono, a small stereo, and I can
have a monitor matrix built into it.
Yeah. And you could actually go through, and if you need to adjust or attenuate volumes, if you have different, you know, levels or different amplifiers and speakers, you could attenuate that as well.
Well, that's important because a lot of times when I'm jumping back between films and games, the whole setup and tuning of my room totally changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's actually a mix convert plugin that's part of the control room. So it has my 5.1 translate to mono, to stereo, to 4.1 without a sub, without a center channel.
And what are you using for hardware I/O?
You know, we're kind of agnostic with the hardware I/O. So a lot of our larger post facilities are using like MADI based systems and a lot of our live recording systems. So we have a lot of concerts that are actually, like with the Digico console, it's very popular, especially in Europe. It has a MADI out and they'll just simply take 56 channels out over a single cable and record the entire show. And the bands love it because they could just take the output the next night and run it back in and do the sound check.
Wow.
You know? So it's like, okay, we did a line level check and boom, the guy turned the room. It was great. You know, so we had a lot of tours. I think I've heard that Prince's tour was all recorded in Nuendo. Eric Clapton's last tour was all done in Nuendo. I was just out helping out with the summer with the Crossroads Festival in Chicago. That was all tracked in Nuendo as well. So I think DVDs are coming out in November. So Jeff Beck was amazing.
We'll have to check it out. Let me ask you a question, getting away from a little bit from the products. How's it working out with Yamaha? I thought when that whole thing came through, because Steinberg, I mean, who were you with? Pinnacle before? Mm-hmm. I mean, it happened in a blur, that whole transition.
Yeah, Pinnacle is a weird phase.
but now that you're with Yamaha, you know, the rumors and people were talking about, well, you know, Yamaha's so big, they're not going to be able to, you know, they're going to kind of forget about it. And other people are saying, no, it's perfect. You know, you get the synthesizers and all that research on the back end. And I think it's been going well. It looks like your products have been
I think they've left our engineering department to kind of do what they do. And it hasn't been, okay, we're going to, you know, we're doing a lot of integration stuff. So like now when you get a Yamaha motif, you can get what's called a Cubase AI, and it offers advanced integration. So you could have kind of like, you know, if you're familiar with like the O2R 96, like their studio manager editor,
right,
that will basically be part of the software. So you have kind of advanced integration. I think we're seeing actually Yamaha now kind of, you know, making sure that Yamaha is being built up as a brand independent of Yamaha as well. So, and we'll see, you know, everyone always assumes that products are going to come out like, you know, oh, we're, you know, we're one company. It's going to come out and, you know, next month there'll be this great integrated product.
Right.
And we're seeing some of this stuff now. Like they've just released kind of what they call an N series mixer, which is kind of like an analog mixer with kind of a digital heart. So it has, real time, kind of like a morphing compressor on input or output, as well as like SPX quality effects in the box. Right. So it's a really kind of high quality analog box.
What version of the SPX though?
I think it's the...
Not 90.
A good one. So you can actually kind of print reverb and print with compression if you want to, and monitor with zero latency.
Boy, that was just a really geeky joke.
That was a geeky joke.
I mean, only people who've worked with an SPX 90.
Yeah, someone just gave me one. Yeah.
And it's not just geeks, it's elderly geeks who can remember when that was new.
So I think like maybe, you know, we'll see some other hardware stuff, you know, and Yamaha is obviously a huge company, biggest music company in the world, so you know, for them it's kind of like a big aircraft carrier, and it's like, you know, make a left turn, and it's, you know, there's committees that have to plan products. So I think we'll see some really exciting stuff in maybe the next 3-4 months.
Oh, that's cool.
Of new products.
So is Nuendo in post-production? I mean, I know they've been tickling it, but it seemed like Nuendo was huge at the beginning when Pinnacle first took them over, and then Pinnacle kind of destroyed that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they went to Yamaha, they kind of like disappeared from the post market. And now I'm seeing like little inklings on, you know, individuals that are toying with it, but I haven't seen as much of an impact. Is Yamaha interested in being part of the post community?
Or? Yeah, I think so. And also now it's, you know, there's several different divisions at Yamaha. So Steinberg in the U.S. has fallen within the PAC division. There's also the Widecast, the Yamaha Commercial Audio Services, which does like a lot of the large format live sound. So now Nuendo is a shared product between the two divisions. So often salespeople would kind of have certain stores and not be able to, you know, there were very few kind of shared accounts between the two divisions. So now both divisions are selling Nuendo. And I think, you know, obviously there's a large Mac base. So, you know, we didn't have a Nuendo version that was working on the current Macs until recently, all the Intel Macs. And I think also, you know, we didn't want to say it's a post product and not have quite the post features and automation that people were expecting. So I think we kind of backed off a little bit in pushing that so much. But now I think we have the feature set to really kind of go in there. And we have a lot of, you know, post facilities using it are, you know, incredibly productive and happy.
Mm-hmm. Are you feeling a lot of pressure from some of the other developers that are out there with their upgrades? Like I just got, you know, Logic 8, and I know Sonar just came out with their new version.
It's a lot of features that we've had for a number of years. I think one thing, if you kind of look at the playing field, you'll see that Steinberg is definitely kind of the innovative company. And now we see, you know, Logic coming out with, okay, you do sample editing on the arrange page. And, you know, we do that with our OEM Cubase LE products that you get free with audio interfaces. And, you know, we just assume it's a given. And, you know, so we're seeing a lot of the features that we've had for 2 or 3 versions kind of being implemented. They may be better marketed in the new versions, but, you know, they're kind of old features for us in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, one thing with Steinberg is I've always liked your virtual instruments, like X-Phrase. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, to me, one of the the quirkiest little weird little plugin that I used it on all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. Yeah.
It's fun, and I was they don't have an upgrade on that one to. I mean, it looks like
part of the development for that was done by Wizzu as well. So we kind of lost, you know, the Wizzu connection.
Right.
So we lost some of that, but I think we'll see some remedies for that coming really soon.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have to point out too. I mean, did Digi show Pro Tools 7.4 at AES? They must have.
Yes, they did.
Because there are some things in Pro Tools 7.4 that Cubase and Nuendo had been doing for quite a while too.
Right.
And I think it's cool because I'm using. You know, both of them, or I'll be using both. But, you know, the way the audio warping kind of thing works in the new Pro Tools is something that Steinberg's been doing for quite a while.
Yeah, well, the thing about it was amazing about the audio warping with Steinberg is it sounded so good, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. there was just no artifacting. Okay, this is good. It's good. Okay, now we're warping. Okay, we're out of warping.
It's really smooth.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, I got a call. It was from Daryl Pearson, who does like a lot of R&B stuff from a Michael Jackson session. He's like, I saw you do this in a demo. It's like, you know, and they landed in Ireland and they had the whole project. It was like 73 tracks at 119 beats a minute and they wanted it at 112. And they didn't want their first day to sit there and time stretch files. I'm like, okay, just go in, assign. You know, select all the files, assign the tempo 119, or like, okay, I did that, and put it in musical mode, or like, did that, and I'm like, okay, type in 112 in the transport and hit play, and they're like, oh my God. You know, just did that, didn't it? You know?
It's pretty major.
Wow. Score one for Steinberg on that.
Well, it's good to know that all the other manufacturers do sit in on the NAMM show demos in the Steinberg booth.
I see them there watching me all the time, taking notes. It's kind
of I know they're there. A lot of them are my friends. Yeah. I know they're there.
Well, it brings up a good point there is you guys have all the features, but a lot of the other, like Logic, I mean, that is just packed with a lot of instruments and a lot of sounds and a lot of, as far as I'm concerned, it's packed with too much stuff because that's all I need is another 46 gigs worth of information.
Yeah, I mean, how good is stuff if you can't, if it's overwhelming to find it?
Yeah.
You know, so it almost gets to be, you know, it's like sometimes I liked it when I had one MIDI module and I just had to work with that, you know, but at least now I'm finding like we have what we call Media Bay. So now I can kind of find all my sounds that I use, all my presets, and I could tag them how I want, you know, independent of if it's, you know, from a Steinberg product or whether it's a Native Instruments product. So I think a lot of times having too much information can, of accessing it, is more of a nuisance.
That's what I found. I bought the Logic 8 upgrade too.
Right.
And I mean, now you get an unbelievable amount of stuff. They dropped the price hugely.
Right.
And it's kind of overwhelming. I mean, on the box, it's saying, and you get this, and you get this, and you get this. And I'm just reading it saying, and do I need this? I don't even know what this is.
Well, you know, that's so funny because, you know, what's one of the things I wanted to bring up too is I just installed Complete, and that was another, you know, 60-odd gigs of information.
I know. I'm out of USB 2 and FireWire ports, so I'm going to have to get like a net disk.
And then,
I think just for content.
And then I want to get Structure, and that's another 15 gigs plus the 40 gig library that you have access for 30 days, and it's just really overwhelming the amount of stuff. And quite frankly, I just think, do I really need another orchestral, you know?
Oh, the answer is no. No one does. I mean, it's if you're just always trying to stay on top of what everybody's doing, you'll end up going through terabytes of the stuff.
I mean, there's certain instruments like. I'm okay with like Spectrasonics and their 3 gig files and their, you know,
it's manageable.
Yeah, it's manageable, and with
well, it's even also Stanford. It's always very original and very useful.
Right, right.
Where as you say, you know, I don't need another attempt at sampling a Steinway because if they're giving it away, it's not going to be oh well, finally here's the good one.
Right.
It's going to be okay. It's probably good, but it's not going to be great. And you've already got good. Versions of everything they're including, I'm sure, in terms of sample library.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. Even like, even the loops for like the Apple loops and the jam packs that they give you, you know, more and more as I'm getting like demos sent to me and things like that, you can just hear the same loops that
people use. It's like the Necorg M1 pack.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, you know, Prince can do it because he would always be first. Like he had his D50 record.
Right.
And then that was it. It was every preset on the D50 was on that record. But he's Prince.
Right, right.
So.
And I don't know. I ended up not installing a lot of stuff. I mean, I've like, you know, I use the contact library, so that's like my sample library, but I don't even look at the other ones. I do like the virtual instruments that come with like Logic 8.
Yeah, there's value there.
And those are great. And like I said, and you know, the bread and butter of like the Steinberg, you know, the virtual guitar and virtual bass. But even then, that's only like 2 gigs and 1 gig.
Well, I noticed Cubase 4 came with a lot more instruments and sounds than previous Cubases had. Is that something people had complained about?
People always will compare it to, you know, and it always gets to be like, oh, I get so many gigabytes here, so many gigabytes there. But it's like, you know, really, you know, does it really matter the size or kind of the, you know, if you look at a Motif that I think has 128 megs, you know, and probably sounds superior to just about every virtual instrument.
That's true.
You know, so it's not really the size that matters. It kind of,
but also, I mean, we're speaking as people who've been building up our sample libraries for 20 years. Whereas, if this is the very first thing you buy,
no, that's true.
Fair enough. You know, get some content that kind of covers the spectrum. That's good.
No, you're right. And Logic Studio definitely
but like
covers
you, you just don't install it. If you don't need it, don't go through the 40 gigabytes of stuff. Just install the programs and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just added a 4 terabyte network attached storage box for content.
It's full.
It will be soon.
4 terabytes?
Yeah. Well, the prices have really come down on those kinds of things.
Wow. Just wait till
you find the access time fast enough for sample.
Yeah, it's actually faster. Because I have it striped as a RAID 5 array, it's actually faster on gigabit Ethernet than hooking up a FireWire drive would be. As long as there's only one machine pulling from it at a time, it's faster than a FireWire drive. And if you have two machines pulling from it, it's still plenty fast.
Wow. I just want to be there, Rob, when you forget the name of that one snare sample.
Oh, you know what? It's already past the point of ridiculousness. It's really – we've talked about it before, but keeping track of a humongous library is a real problem.
Especially when you have 400 sounds called Snare 1.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I'm sure I do.
Yeah. No, that happens all the time. No, what I find myself doing in the library just to spark creativity is I'll always find a sound I like in the first 20 or 30 I'm searching through, so I just always try to start searching someplace different.
Right.
Because that way I know at least I'm going to pick something different. Because, you always end up finding, you know, something you get married to right away early in the search.
Oh, it's that sound from the Sinclair. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, Greg, it sounds like Steinberg is just moving forward and doing a lot of really great and exciting things there. And I'm looking forward to it. You guys going to have a good showing over at NAMM? You going to be rolling out some stuff?
We had a great AES show, and we'll be showing kind of 4.1 for the first time for end users and some new stuff. I think maybe like a new light version of WaveLab as well,
with
a lot of podcasting capabilities.
Oh, that's good.
Will WaveLab work on Mac or still on the only PC?
I think we may see something later, like next year, they'll be Mac compatible. So they're working on it.
Any really good inside, you know, thing that we can break here? Come on.
Not yet. They don't tell me anything because they know I talk to people. We have user groups throughout the country. And I was told like one kind of early release date. The one guy once, and he went online and I mentioned it in a forum, and I just got like 10 hateful calls from Germany the next day. Like, did you say this? I'm like, yes. Like, we didn't expect you to tell the truth.
You have thrown us
to
off.
To one guy.
I'll tell you what. If you say anything here, we won't post it on a forum.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I do have one question for you. Is WaveLab 6 still current? Has there been any change in WaveLab?
That's the current version, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where would you recommend if somebody wanted to get started with some of your Steinberg products? Where's a good place to start? Would you recommend using the OEM version that they have with some of the hardware that's out there?
Yeah, a lot of people are doing that. We also now have kind of a, because we sell like, it's ridiculous, like 20,000 copies of our OEM copies a month of like Cubase LE with different sound cards.
Sure.
So actually now what we're doing through the holiday season is we have kind of a special like half off upgrade that you can get at like Guitar Center or just about any music store.
Wow.
So you get like Cubase Studio 4 for like $199 and $399 for the full Cubase 4. So it's a great value.
Wow.
So we see people going and buying like an $80 interface to get the Cubase LE version and then getting Cubase for half off. So it's kind of a win-win for the customers. So it's a great way. And there's also, for people to get exposed to some of the features, we have a website called SteinbergUsers.com, which has a lot of video guides. There's about 50 or 60 different. This is how time warp works. This is how audio warp works. This is how you do vocal comping and kind of showing like techniques, like little 3 to 5 minute videos. So, and that's absolutely free for people to check out as well.
That's cool. Cause I've just been giving Rob's phone number for the time warp.
Hey, I learned it by asking Greg at a nap show. And there's no lie. One other thing I want to say, you said you can get that in stores. I definitely noticed during the Pinnacle days that all the Steinberg products started to kind of disappear from stores. And it was a sad thing because the development was still cool and the products were great. But ever since Yamaha took over, my perception is that the stuff is showing up back in stores again, and it feels like a normal product.
Yeah, I think Pinnacle kind of didn't really have relationships in the MI channel.
Right.
And they thought, you know, and their video products were sold kind of always through, like, you know, I think 95% of their business were through like 7 sub-distributors. So it's kind of a different model, and I think they kind of realized that.
Well, I do know that you know, you guys make some great stuff. I love your virtual guitar too, and I like the virtual bassist. And Groove Agent 3, you know, I don't have it, but I have Groove Agent 1, and it's been great. So you're doing
Groove Agent
3.
You have a new percussionist.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out. Well, I just want to encourage you, if you're thinking about, you know, wanting to make a switch, or you wanting to get into some sequencing or some audio DAW software, you need to check out Steinberg, because they have some really neat things, some really musical things. What's the best place? Steinberg.net, is it? Or
that's kind of the main corporate website. In the U.S. we have kind of a new user site with Steinberg users, and there's always information to be gathered from the forums like cubase.net or nuendo.com. But you have to kind of always take things with a grain of salt, as you do with any forum.
There's a lot of good information there, though. I've found answers to some questions.
Yeah, a lot of times people will call me and it's like, oh, let me search the database. And I just search the forum real quick. And, oh, there's your answer. You know?
And if you don't get your answers there, you can reach Rob on his cell at...
No, I have it forwarded to Greg's cell. So call me. It'll go
it's
to
all
Greg.
Good.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for joining us here.
Great to be here.
We appreciate you. And you're always welcome to come back. And this is, you know, this is show 40, guys. So, you know, it's good to have a good guest on 40. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up, but before we go, anybody work, Rob, you working on anything right now, or are you still just...
I'm so close to being able to talk about stuff.
Okay.
Still not there, but an announcement soon.
Okay. Andrew, are you...
Working on stuff, but another record that I was involved in came out, I believe, today, actually, Nicole Atkins.
Oh, great.
Songwriter from New Jersey.
Great.
Really
Jersey,
good album.
Jersey.
And Scott, we heard what you were working on. And
yep,
that sounds
Stoner
like,
and Express. And U2-3 finally came out.
Oh, great.
So,
what is that?
Unreal Tournament 3.
That's a game.
Oh, it's a game.
It's a
show. Unreal Tournament. Okay.
Is it called U2-3 or is it 2007?
It's referred to as U2-3.
Oh.
It's one of those.
I understand.
No, it's a big video game. Yes,
cool.
It is, and it is big. Well, you know, one thing I wanted to also cover before we go is I had somebody write in and ask why a lot of times we can't talk about some of the stuff that we when I ask you at the end. And I know for a fact that a lot of reasons why I can't mention a lot of stuff that I'm working on is because exactly what Scott was saying, you know, non-disclosure agreements where, you know, you can't mention any of the projects before they're released, and I'm sure that's the way it is with
you know what, a lot of times with me that's one of the main reasons is the non-disclosure thing and clients who don't want you talking about the project before it's done. The reason I can't talk about the thing that I'm working on now is really because it's still coming into focus.
Sure.
It's a huge, not career change, but it's going in a whole new direction for me, and the main reason I don't want to talk about it is that if I end up changing the direction,
sure,
or not doing it, it's much easier to not have to explain to everybody why it ended up being different than how I first announced it,
right,
or why I didn't do it in the first place. It's better to just – and this isn't just true for me. It's true for anyone. If you're working on something, it's a good idea to, if you can, keep it to yourself until the idea is fully realized.
Sure.
Because as soon as you start to talk to people about it, you'll feel a need to kind of live up to the expectation you've put in their minds. If you haven't told everybody what you're doing, you can still have the freedom to change it. And that's where I am right now. I have my plan pretty well figured out, but until I really have it nailed down,
right,
I don't want to talk about it because I may still change it.
Sure. And I know, Andrew, you're probably...
Well, just artists don't want me to be the one announcing they're making a record.
Right.
You know, because
right,
if they scrap the record, if there's no release date or, you know, there's no way.
Yeah.
So I tell you when they come out. Like
that's right.
Today, Nicole Atkins.
No, which is great. And so... you know, now you know that we're not just being stuck up when we say these things.
No, and sometimes they actually finally come out, which is good. Because I know I went a couple of months like, oh, I think some of this stuff's going to come out. And we've had three records in the last couple of weeks.
Right, so that's true.
And there are plenty of artists who actually, if you're going to work on their project, they make you sign something saying you're not going to talk about it. Yeah. Same with games and TV shows and films and everything else. Sometimes it's a legal contractual obligation.
And manufacturers as well. I mean, if beta testing for any of these manufacturers, like Steinberg, there's no way you can talk about the stuff before it comes out because they may change it or right. they may push a release date. And,
also, they want to control the marketing. And if everyone's out talking about it, especially if it's not great news, they don't want that buzz. They want to control the buzz.
Yeah.
And from a manufacturer point of view, it's like we don't want to necessarily give away our feature set 6 months
yeah.
early.
Yeah. Or
and have our competition be able to.
And also, you wouldn't sell
thereafter.
Anything for yeah. 6 months.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
everybody knows something's coming.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Everybody knows what's coming.
All
so
like all the logic people that bought it for really expensive the next day was half
price.
You
know what? I was standing in West LA Music the day that the new Logic came and it was half price compared to what it used to be. And I was there as the calls were coming in from people who had bought it a week before, 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before. And the grace period. When you could get your money back or get the difference was not very long.
Yeah.
And people were pretty upset about it.
Well,
same though with the iPhone, the price
yeah.
dropping.
Yeah. I was an iPhoner, so yeah, I know how that goes.
But what was the deal with Leopard? If you bought, because I was wondering about this and I didn't have time to get to the store. If you bought a laptop computer, say a week or two before Leopard came, yeah. were you just screwed or would they give you
there was an upgrade path for a couple weeks or I don't
it's
think it was
hard.
More
days.
Than, yeah.
It's hard when a company has a big product change come out like that. How do you
it's gotta come out at some point.
Yeah. And the thing, at least with the computer, it works with Tiger coming out of the box, it works really well. So it's not like you're getting
non-functional.
Yeah, right. Non-functional.
But you know what, if you paid $1,000 for Logic and then the next day it was $500.
Piss me off.
Exactly.
All right, gang. Well, we're gonna wrap it up. I do wanna also announce that I am gonna be starting another podcast called PracticalAutism.com. It's a podcast for parents of autistic kids, and I mentioned it on the last podcast, and we've gotten some really good response. And I just wanted to mention it again that if you're in the LA area and you are a parent of an autistic child, and if you want to be on the panel, it's going to be similar to what we do here. Then just give me drop me an email at, you can go to audio@nowcastnetwork.com or you can reach me at contact@practicalautism.com.
And you're still just going to talk about Pro Tools though, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Teaching autistic kids to use Pro Tools. My son actually loves working on my computer, so that's not too far off. But, I just want to also mention that if you have any questions for any of the guys or you want to drop us an email, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And you can also visit us on our MySpace page and drop us a line there because we do read them and they do get to us and we usually do talk about them too.
And check out the new Cubase innuendo and then have questions for Greg at the NAMM show. He'll be there.
Right.
And I'll probably be there with him.
And before we go, I got to give a plug to Ken Kane and his band. And they have a great video on YouTube. And Ken, why don't you, where can they find it? Stray Bullet?
Yeah, it's Stray Bullets. And it's April in August is the name of the video. And you can also check out the MySpace. It's myspace.com/StrayBulletBeats. Check it out.
but seriously, you got to look at Stray Bullet. Is it Stray Bullets or Stray Bullet?
Stray Bullets.
But look for it, and I'll play it. When we're off the air, I'll play it for you guys because it's really good. And I wanted to give Ken a plug because he did a really good job.
All right,
Ken. Song.
All right.
And the video.
Yeah. Don't get used
really
to it.
Good.
Don't get used to it.
All right. Well, for other guys, Greg, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropalo and uses Apex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.